I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date. Whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson. We love guitars.
Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at Madison Computer Works and Jeff's Guitar Clinic. Joining us now, John Nichols from the Capital Times. So, John, yesterday was a disaster for the president. I mean, his team was so bad that, you know, the media is actually saying they were destroyed.
Well, without a doubt, and let's be clear about what happened yesterday. We're speaking on Wednesday morning, just a couple hours after the Senate. We're speaking relatively early in the morning, just a couple hours after the Senate went out of session because they went to like 1:40 in the morning East Coast time. And here's the fascinating thing about it. The McConnell came down with a whole bunch of rules, all designed to protect Donald Trump in this impeachment trial. The rules were arbitrary, calculated, you know, just a mess. And they knew they'd be challenged, right? But McConnell expected the Democrats to be incompetent. And often that's a safe expectation. But in this case, they were incredibly well prepared. And so what they did was they used their ability to produce amendments and to force votes on amendments to McConnell's rules to put their whole case out. And anybody who watched what happened, especially last night, the Democrats were literally on national television, on all the cable networks, on radio. You know, I know not everybody watches this, but a lot of people do. A lot of people take it seriously. They were showing all the old videos from the congressional hearings. They were reading testimony in. They were raising all the right questions. They essentially, Sly, got a 12-hour infomercial on why Donald Trump should be removed. And I think McConnell was completely shaken by this. So McConnell repeatedly tried to shut the process down, but he couldn't once it had started. And then here's the incredible thing. The, you know, freak show of lawyers that Donald Trump has hired, right? You know, literally, I don't know if there's like a directory for ridiculous lawyers who will say whatever a crazy client.
Yeah, well, let's start with that, okay? So here is Alan Dershowitz in 1998.
It certainly doesn't have to be a crime if you have somebody who completely corrupts the office of president and who abuses trust and who poses great danger to our liberty. You don't need a technical crime. To impeach a president is like a nonviolent revolution. It is the most dramatic act of undoing democracy that is possible, and that's why the framers used the term treason, bribery, high crimes and misdemeanors to suggest the English analogy to great offenses of state. We look at their acts of state. We look at how they conduct the foreign policy. We look at whether they try to subvert the Constitution the way Iran-Contra did by going behind the back of Congress.
Well, that sounds right. So here he is.
Well, it's the same position that was successfully argued by former Justice Benjamin Curtis in the trial of Andrew Johnson. Andrew Johnson was impeached in part for non-criminal conduct, and Curtis, who was the dissenting judge in the Dred Scott case and one of the most eminent jurists in American history, made the argument that has been called absurdist, namely that when you read the text of the Constitution, bribery, treason, bribery, other high crimes and misdemeanors, other really means that crimes and misdemeanors must be of akin to treason and bribery. And he argued very successfully, winning the case, that you needed proof of an actual crime. It needn't be a statutory crime, but it has to be criminal behavior, criminal in nature. And the allegations in the Johnson case were much akin to the allegations here, abusive conduct, obstructive conduct, and that lost. So I am making an argument much like the argument made by the great Justice Curtis, and to call them absurdist is to, you know, insult one of the greatest jurists in American history.
Thoughts?
I'm glad to insult.
I knew what you'd written a book on this.
Yeah, I mean, Justice Curtis's arguments were absurd. And yes, like any jurist, from Clarence Thomas to Justice Ginsburg, they have good rulings and bad rulings. And yeah, you can point to some things that Justice Curtis did that were good back in the 1850s. But in this case, his argument was absurd. And I would like to point out that they were a miserable failure. It is true that Andrew Johnson was not removed from office when that final Senate vote took place. But, you know, Johnson survived, even though an overwhelming majority of senators voted against him. It was just because they had this incredibly high threshold. And at the end of the day, what happened was it was so close to the 1868 election when Johnson had already decided not to run for a full term, that the Senate essentially decided, oh, screw it. And for Dershowitz to now argue that somehow this justice's argument was stunningly convincing and, you know, completely shifted the case, it didn't. Anyone who knows the history of what occurred there knows that, you know, the majority of senators believed that Johnson should be removed. They weren't. Their opinions weren't shifted there. And so he's doing something that is very sly. And
you can, what?
In this case, yeah, I'm sorry, he's very sneaky. Nicely done, brother. He's doing something very sneaky here. He's not a stupid man. He knows how to use history selectively to make it seem like his rivals, his opponents, are somehow way out of sync with the arc of the moral universe. But anybody who knows the actual history of what occurred back with Andrew Johnson, and frankly that what has occurred throughout the entire history of impeachment, will tell you that abuse of office is the heart of this thing. If the founders had wanted simply to have a legal mechanism for removing a president from office, right, they would have not put high crimes and misdemeanors. They wouldn't have suggested the additional prospects there. Of course, if you're found to be guilty of treason or, you know, bribery or things like that, yes, you know, that's quite appropriate. But what they wanted to say was, that's not the only reason you take somebody out of the presidency. You also take them out if they are using the office of the presidency to enrich or empower themselves. And, I mean, anyone who knows the history of why we have the impeachment power knows that it isn't about the individual, it's about the office. Are you corrupting the office? Are you using the office in a way that you should not use it? And that's exactly what Donald Trump has done. And for Alan Dershowitz to argue anything else is, it's not just wrong legally, politically, morally, it's also crudely cynical, because it assumes that most people don't know enough about their own country that they would fall for these absurd arguments.
All right, here is White House counsel and part of the legal team for Donald Trump yesterday, Pat Cipollone.
In every other impeachment proceeding, The president has been given a minimal due process. Nothing here. Not even Mr. Schiff's Republican colleagues were allowed into the skiff. Information was selectively leaked out. Witnesses were threatened. Good public servants were told that they would be held in contempt. They were told that they were obstructing. What does Mr. Schiff mean by obstructing? He means that unless you do exactly what he says, regardless of your constitutional rights, then you're obstructing. The president was not allowed to call witnesses. By the way, there's still evidence in the skiff that we haven't been allowed to see. I wonder why.
Now, I'm not going to suggest to you that Mr. Cipollone would deliberately make a false statement. I will leave it to Mr. Cipollone to make those allegations against others. But I will tell you this, he's mistaken. Every Republican on the three investigative committees was allowed to participate in the depositions. And more than that, they got the same time we did. You show me another proceeding, another presidential impeachment or other that had that kind of access for the opposite party. Now, there were depositions in the Clinton impeachment. There were depositions in the Nixon impeachment. So what they would say is some secret process. Well, they were the same private depositions in these other impeachments as well.
Do they not understand, you know, there's a recorded history of all this, and it's not very long ago.
No, it's like some people even remember a couple weeks ago. Where do you begin with this, right? Of course, the president's counsel is lying. He lied to the Congress of the United States. The immediate reaction to his statements yesterday was a flurry of people saying, it's too bad they didn't require the lawyers to swear an oath to tell the truth. Because they're clearly not, you know, the senators had to swear an oath. Obviously, many of them will violate it, led by Ron Johnson. But the lawyers, literally, Trump's lawyers, were lying to the Senate. They were lying to the Senate about recent history, particularly the stuff with the skiff. There were Republicans in and out of there, you know, the whole bit. And they were trying to create these sort of false premises, like, there's a whole bunch of evidence that exonerates the president that somehow wasn't released. Do you understand? If there was any evidence exonerating the president that was available, do you think Devin Nunes somehow is going to sit on that? You know, I mean, and Jim Jordan's going to sit on that? No. They had nothing to work with throughout this process because it was impossible to exonerate a president who literally acknowledged substantial amounts of his wrongdoing. And so what they're doing here is trying to create incredibly false premises. And this may be the worst part of it of all. They're trying to literally sort of come up with arguments on the fly. I don't know if you noticed yesterday that when the president's lawyers were speaking before the Senate, they would often pause for substantial amounts of time. You know, you'd hear, sorry, and it is our belief that there's evidence in the skiff, right? It sounded like they were literally making things up, you know, like they're thinking through their head.
Yes, it reminded me of being in 10th grade, of pretending that I'd read a book for a book report that I had not read.
Yeah, and you're searching your head. Is there a word I might be able to spit out here that would make it sound like I had prepared?
By the way, does that shock you that I was in that situation?
With all due respect, everyone's been in that situation, but I suspect you were in it a little more than some. And as the Reverend Jesse Jackson said correctly, the evidence of pop quizzes confirms that there will always be prayer in school.
Okay, here's another moment from the trial yesterday.
I am struck by what we have heard from the president's counsel so far tonight. They complain about process, but they do not seriously contest any of the allegations against the president. They insist that the president has done nothing wrong, and they lie, and lie, and lie, and lie.
Mr. Nadler came up here and made false allegations against our team. He's been making false allegations against the president. The only one who should be embarrassed, Mr. Nadler, is you.
Mr. Cipollone says, President Trump is a man of his word. President Trump gave his word he would drain the swamp. We've seen his personal lawyer go to jail, his campaign chairman go to jail, his deputy campaign chairman convicted of a different crime. The list goes on and on. That's, I guess, how you drain the swamp, is you have all your people go to jail.
I think it is appropriate at this point for me to admonish both the House managers and the President's counsel in equal terms to remember that they are addressing the world's greatest deliberative body. One reason it has earned that title is because its members avoid speaking in a manner and using language that is not conducive to civil discourse. I do think those addressing the Senate should remember where they are.
That's John Roberts. I burst out laughing. I burst out laughing when I heard that.
A little bit of both siderism there, though, right? You know, it's kind of like, I think everybody should just tone it down. With all due respect, I think this is kind of more on one side. The problem's a little more on one side than the other.
You think? Yeah. All right, we'll take a break. John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation at SliceOffice.com. I want to welcome a new sponsor to SliceOffice.com. The attorneys at Gingrich, Thompson, and Wachs have had the honor of receiving numerous awards for their work both in and outside the courtroom. But just as important as receiving accolades for being skilled attorneys, it's equally important to give back to the community in which they live and work. If you want a personal attorney that can help you in so many different areas, they've got them. They're in Eau Claire, Madison, Milwaukee, and Waukesha. They're easy to reach. GTWLawyers.com. That's GTWLawyers.com. We're back at SliceOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at the Operating Engineers, Local 139. Also, the law firm of Gingrich, Thompson, and Wachs. All right, so, John Nichols, just out of the clear blue, like a bolt of lightning, came this story yesterday.
Tonight, Hillary Clinton unplugged and unleashing. In a new documentary, she opens up about it all, including Bernie Sanders. A quote from the film in a Hollywood Reporter article, Clinton saying he was in Congress for years. He had one senator support him. Nobody likes him. Nobody wants to work with him. He got nothing done. Clinton and the filmmaker both spoke to the magazine about the new documentary, exploring it all. The reporter asking if Clinton stands by what she said about Sanders. She said yes. Sanders off the campaign trail for the impeachment trial, responding today.
On a good day, my wife likes me, so let's clear the air on that one. Secretary Clinton is entitled to her point of view. My job today is to focus on the impeachment trial.
Why do you think the secretary is still talking about 2016?
That is a good question. Ask him.
Clinton's comments come just a week after Sanders faced off with Elizabeth Warren over her claim Sanders told her a woman could not win in 2020.
I think you called me a liar on national TV. I think you called me a liar on national TV.
Clinton was asked about that too, saying it's part of a pattern. If it were a one-off, you might say, okay, fine. But he said, I was unqualified. I had a lot more experience than he did and got a lot more done than he had. But that was his attack on me.
Of course, so many of the candidates for president are right here in Washington for the impeachment trial. Others remain in Iowa, and that's where Eva Pilgrim is tonight. And Eva, Hillary Clinton was also asked if she would endorse Bernie Sanders if he gets the nomination, and she was unwilling to offer support, at least for now.
That's right, David. Clinton saying, quote, I'm not going to go there yet. We're still in a very vigorous primary season, adding that she finds the culture of his campaign and the attacks, particularly against women, to be worrisome. Late today, a spokesperson for Clinton saying she will support whoever the nominee is. David.
Well, could you have done Bernie Sanders any bigger favor?
Look.
Seriously, seriously, I would welcome her condemnation.
Well, let's understand that she's a former nominee of the party.
Whatever. Whatever. She's a loser. She's a as Donald Trump would say, she's a loser.
Well, let me finish the thought here. Well, there's a lot of losers who support her, sometimes valuable, and winners too. But
loser.
She did get the most votes. But hey, let me just offer a thought here, though. Does it harm Sanders? No, it doesn't. It clearly was intended to harm Sanders, but it won't. Just as an awful lot of the stuff that's been thrown at Sanders won't harm him, because I think the thing that people don't understand is that Sanders' supporters and those who are leaning toward him actually know him pretty well. They understand him pretty clearly, and they're attracted to who he is and what he's saying and what he's trying to accomplish. So the notion that something said by Hillary Clinton is somewhat going to undermine him politically at this point, no, it's not going to. But here's the interesting part of this, the fascinating part of this, is if Hillary Clinton wants to weigh into this race and have an impact on it, why doesn't she call up the candidate she likes and say, hey, I'm going to come out to Iowa and endorse you, right, and see where that goes? Now, you say, well, oh, she's the immediate former nominee. She wouldn't. No, John Kerry.
Endorsed Biden.
Has gone out and campaigned for Biden, and frankly, been a very, in my opinion, very beneficial to Joe Biden, because Kerry's, especially when Kerry was saying some very strong stuff about Iran and Trump's incredibly dangerous moves as regards Iran, Kerry stepped up in some really smart, really effective ways, and he said so in the context of being a Biden backer. And so if Clinton wants to weigh into this, fantastic. Welcome her in. But the thing is, to come in sort of trying to say, oh, well, here's who I don't like. Here's, you know, who I would extract from the race. That isn't, you know, that, by any means, that doesn't benefit the race, but it also doesn't benefit Clinton. I mean, I don't know who's advising her on this stuff, but the notion that coming in and, you know, talking down a prominent candidate on the day before a CNN poll comes out showing him leading the race, and that is what happened on Wednesday morning. CNN poll put him ahead of Biden by 3 points nationally, and at a point where, you know, there's pretty good evidence that he's surging. It seems an awfully lot like the establishment, the sort of insiders of the party, the person who, for better or worse, seems to embody that to a lot of people, whether you agree with that theory or not, is trying sort of a last-ditch effort to stop Sanders. At this point, I will just suggest to you that campaigning with grassroots voters in Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, Nevada, and other states who are frustrated by the inability of the Democratic Party to effectively defeat Donald Trump in 2016 and in many ways to thwart him in the ensuing period, campaigning with the, you know, as an outsider in that circumstance, that's a good thing. Saying that you're different and you've got a new way of doing it, that's an appealing thing. And that isn't just what Bernie Sanders is doing. That's what Elizabeth Warren is doing. That's what Pete Buttigieg is doing. If you've listened to Buttigieg's recent speeches, they are, you know, aggressively anti-Washington, aggressively critical of the patterns.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, this notion that he didn't get a bunch of Washington insiders to endorse him is, sorry.
Yeah.
It's just,
oh, no, not that.
Or he hasn't passed, a lot of legislation. Well, you know what he didn't pass? He wasn't responsible for passing the bankruptcy bill. She was. He wasn't responsible for giving George Bush the green light to go into Iraq. She was. I mean, you can go down the list.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, look, the bottom line on this is pretty clear. That there are
differences. She's a loser.
No. There are differences in the Democratic Party, ideological differences. That's a challenge for Joe Biden.
I'm not really sure she has an ideology. She has a calculation.
Doing this at this point doesn't help Hillary Clinton. It doesn't really clarify the race. People who like Hillary Clinton a lot, who are really impassioned about her, they're not backing Bernie Sanders probably at this point. That's my sense. And people who had a problem with her, maybe some of them are backing Sanders, but frankly, I will bet you that a chunk of them are also backing a number of the other candidates. At the end of the day, genuinely, I say this. If Clinton wants to be a part of this, she should be weighing in favor of a candidate she likes.
But they're playing the gender card. They're trying to paint Bernie as a sexist. And if the Warren attack had stuck, we'd see some movement by now. But she's in fourth place. Elizabeth Warren is in fourth, and I'm not blaming her for what Hillary did yesterday.
No,
but she's in fourth place in New Hampshire.
Well, and I think there's another thing to recognize here. Elizabeth Warren may well end up as the nominee. Don't rule that out, because this is a churning, complex, and unsettled race. There's no doubt of that. But the fact of the matter is that there are a lot of women who back Bernie Sanders. And I think that sometimes, you know, when you come in as Hillary has here, you don't pull women away from Sanders in this case. You cause a lot of them, as has been seen on the internet and on, you know, the responses to this, cause a lot of them to speak up and say why they are backing Sanders, right? You know, this is, I think we need a woman president. I favor electing a woman president. I think it's time. I think it was time a long time ago. I've still got my Shirley Chisholm pin. But I also think that if we begin with that premise, if we begin that it's time to do that, then you also say that women have a choice to back the candidate they want to back. And in this case, as is quite evident with the recent endorsements of Sanders by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, Pramila Jayapal, very prominent women are endorsing Sanders, a lot of them. So it's, I'm not sure that they're trying to, that Clinton weighing in at this point necessarily shifts the process as much as some people maybe in D.C. might think.
Well, unfortunately, she's more Margaret Thatcher than she is Shirley Chisholm. John Nichols from the, I thought you'd like that. John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. Thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com.
Take care, brother.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.